Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, August 15th, 2020. I'm Benjamin Obaya, and joining me today, he is the co-host of the YouTube podcast series, video game series, Date Night, and he's also my twin brother. Let's welcome again, John Obaya.
Mr. Obaya, I'll give you a 3-star rating on this podcast if you can rap for me right now, Ben. Or Mr. Obaya.
Oh, okay. I could do that probably.
Okay.
Give me a word first.
Time.is.
Time.is?
Yes. Okay.
Time.is. I'm Ben Obaya, and we use time.is. And my rhyme that is insanely Miz. I don't know. I think that
what's
I did
Miz? Miz?
No. I was trying to. I'm not as good as the protagonist on Power Project.
Robin.
Power. Yeah, Robin. Yes.
I think her name is Robin. Yeah. I just realized her name is Robin. It's Batman and Robin. Oh
gonna,
my god!
I was gonna mention that.
Okay. Anyway. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
I think they made a joke about that.
Probably they did, but I wasn't paying attention to her name until now. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give impressions of what we watched, listened, played, and read throughout the week, and we end it with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the Netflix film Project Power, which came out this past weekend. And we have a lot to say about it, I think, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, but before all that, John, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer comes from HBO. It's a miniseries titled The Third Day.
Not all of us can be here.
Ever since you came, this island's been divided. But we're all in agreement now.
That is a clip from The Third Day, written and created by Dennis Kelly and Felix Barrett, starring Jude Law, Naomi Harris, Catherine Waterston, Emmy Watson, Patty Considine. Considine. And on the IMDb, this is the premise. Jude Law and Naomi Harris star in the 6-part psychological thriller set on an alluring and mysterious island.
Oh.
Yeah.
Reminds you of other this things. This show.
Yeah. I'll go first, actually.
All right.
So, yeah, I actually suggested this because it came out this past week. I think it caught my attention because my initial reaction, of course, I love television shows that deal with like islands, especially islands with mysterious and supernatural elements.
Okay, I don't know how many shows are like that, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's what's that one
where Gilligan's
there's a small,
Island?
No, there's
Gilligan's
a small person.
Oh.
Fantastic Island.
They just there's remade like a, that with Michael Peña.
Yeah.
Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island. Yeah. See? So my initial reaction is like when watching it or after I watched it was Midsommar plus Lost. I think I text messages. And then I thought about like Wicker Man just because how it looks like it's going to be a cult. Then I dug more to the actual like creation of the series. And I noticed something that caught my attention while reading like the Wikipedia page and reading more about the creators, which are two playwrights. Like they usually write plays in the UK. So apparently, like, I don't know did you dig into this?
No, I didn't even know they were playwrights.
So if the trailer hints that the series is divided into like 3 parts, summer, autumn, and winter.
Yep.
What the trailer doesn't hint at all is that the autumn part, the part between summer and winter, is actually going to be a live stage performance.
What?
Yes.
What the heck? With the actors? Like all
with
them
all the actors, with the actors on the show. Which is confusing, but it's like quite fascinating if I say so myself. Like just the way
they don't,
how ambitious that is.
They don't show that at all, right, in the trailer?
No, it doesn't look like it. They don't hint it at all.
That's insane. Whether the
Yeah, but yeah, as for the trailer itself, I think they're gonna what it looks like is that there's three episodes of summer, and then they're gonna do an autumn live stage performance, and then in winter it ends it with the three episodes again.
When you say live, are you talking about like live like,
yeah, like live, like on the theater?
Oh wow. Live
for us. It's gonna be, I don't know about America, but over there in the UK, because this is also, I don't know what's their counterpart to like HBO in the mm-hmm. UK, but over here I don't think we're gonna get it live like, because you know our time zones are different.
Yeah
But yeah, so it's be interesting. I don't know actually how they're gonna do it because of COVID too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if they're gonna do a Zoom version of it now because of what is happening. But I feel like that's gonna take us out of everything now.
Wait, is this based on something? Like, why are they doing a live playwright? That's why I'm confused.
So what I read was that because it comes from two playwrights, that they wanted to immerse the audience on the second half of the. Of the stage play. So basically it's like three acts.
Okay.
And this is the second act, and then something about the second act that they had to do it live. I didn't mention why, but it's interesting that they're actually doing it. Very ambitious.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's almost as ambitious as Blacklist series finale or season finale.
Yes, finale? With the cartoon.
the cartoon they had the voice acting or something.
Wait,
or the
is it because they couldn't end it?
No, because of what happened, the COVID, they couldn't film certain scenes. So I guess some of it is in the video game world and some of it's in the real world. I don't know. I don't even know if it's dealing with a video game. It's just a stylized choice to do it that way.
I do remember. It looked like a Borderlands type of shell-shaded.
Yeah. Well, a little lower than Borderlands, yeah. But yeah.
But as for the trailer itself, it looks very eerie. Curious about how they're going to insert the horror elements, because it looks like there's horror elements into mm-hmm. it. Especially there's a scene where Jude Law is looking at a truck that's on fire and you hear banging from it. I read that summer has to deal with Jude Law's story and winter has to deal with Naomi Harrison's story.
It looks like they don't cross the way they don't look like they don't
cross at all. Yeah. So yeah, I'm interested. This seems very super ambitious. What's mm-hmm. your thoughts?
Same thing. It does have a midsummer look to it, like with the scenery and the folks in there, like the people, the way they dress, it looks like the midsummer. And then it looks like there is like a weird ritual or whatnot.
Yeah, it does look like that.
Happening. I don't know. I have no idea what's happening.
I wonder if Jude's going to be like, the bees.
Yeah. So it looks weird. So I don't know if it's taking place the same time. Like, I know it probably is in at least the 90s or past the 90s. But I don't know if Jude Law is literally... a different time period than Naomi Harris character.
It kind of looks different
when
now.
You look at it. Yeah. So I don't know if it's just telling a story. She's telling the future and he's telling the past, and something happened that will affect her, basically. And from winter and summer. So the winter and summer is kind of like fooling us, thinking it's like literally the same year, but I it looks like different years, like different times. Periods, basically.
I think I just realized probably the third day is mentioned as a reference of like they both will be affected by the third day of their story.
Probably, yeah. I wonder what that is. Because so watching the or looking at the poster, it looks like a vein going down.
Oh
like
yeah, I didn't realize that.
I wonder if it is something with blood. Like it's something with Jude Law character bloodline is affecting Naomi Harris character. That's what I'm saying, the different time periods and something with the third day. That's my analysis. Thank you for watching Mojo. No, I don't know if you watch this thing where they like break down the hidden meanings.
I do, yeah.
But yeah, it looks cool. I like it. It's just another HBO show. It's like since Leftovers is gone, that's the last like real drama besides like Game of Thrones and whatnot, but on HBO.
But it's also a miniseries, so
yeah. Wait, is this Max or proper?
I actually don't know. I mean, either way, if you have HBO Max,
you need a subscription. Yeah,
yeah. I think.
But yeah,
next week we're gonna talk about Lovecraft Country,
and
I think
that's
HBO Max. Yeah.
Okay. man, they're just like, make it, you know, buy all this stuff right now.
But yeah, I think we're really interested. I think we'll buy you and talk about it once it comes out in a month from now. Mm-hmm. I am actually going to be really interested about the whole live stage thing, because I think that's very ambitious. And because of what is happening now with the pandemic, I don't even know if they could even pull that off at all.
Yeah, I mean, it won't. I'm assuming if they do, it's going to be similar to what I've seen with comedy and like music festivals, where it's more than 6 feet apart from everyone, and it's like only about 50 people. Like that's how much I see.
Speaking of that, I remember you messaged me and I looked at the article about when they're filming the new Jurassic World movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like they're using all the precautions for like COVID and like being social distancing and the 6 feet and whatnot. So it's interesting how people are making films now.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it's like smaller crews and then they're spending less money.
Also, so, I want to know if it's telling on the film when you watch it. Like,
yes.
Why is Chris Pratt so far away from Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be actually kind of interesting. I don't know if they create their own bubble, like the NBA and
a sports movie bubble with film bubble. Oh my god, they should do that. A film bubble.
But yeah,
a TV show bubble. Everything looks exactly the same. Like everything's filmed in the exact same location for all the film and
like the television sets,
shows.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
I think they're filming Jurassic World overseas though. It looks
like. Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, it looks. I mean, the pictures I've seen is in the forest, so I can't tell what is that.
Hmm. They're in America now, right? That's how this ends. Like that's how the other one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're in America. The dinosaurs are loose.
Again.
Yeah, again. Well, yeah, yes, again. Again.
Yeah. But that's the trailer talk. That is the third day coming out, I believe, in September. I forgot which day in September. It's a six-part miniseries for HBO. So look forward to that. So we're just going to go really quick what we've been doing this past week. I've actually been reading a book. Last month was actually Disability Month, where you celebrate people with disability and whatnot. And it's also, I believe it was the anniversary of the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. So this book I'm reading is titled Disability Visibility, First Person Stories from the 21st Century. It's edited by Alice Wong. For those who don't know, Alice Wong is a disability rights activist based in San Francisco, California. She's also the founder of the project, the founder and the project coordinator for Disability Visibility Project, with the help from StoryCorps. I think, do you know what StoryCorps is?
No, I've never.
It's basically like a podcast where individuals tell their stories within like a 5 to 10 minute span. They're very short episodes. A lot of them are very heartwarming and endearing. It does touch upon like people's experience. Like I think every episode is based on the theme or what is being talked about at that moment. So if it's like Thanksgiving, they have a Thanksgiving episode and whatnot. So the project collects oral history from people with disabilities and it archives it so people could read and listen to them. So when Alice Wong created the project, it was put together for the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act of 1990. So, for those who aren't familiar with the ADA, it was like a civil rights law that permits discrimination based on disability. There's like I think I mentioned this before. There's like a wonderful documentary that came out earlier this year called Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. It's on Netflix. I think it's only on Netflix. And it talks about the beginnings of the disability rights movement. It's really eye-opening, especially how we just didn't realize how this all came about like only 50 years ago, the same time as the civil rights movements. So it's kind of astonishing that it took so long, actually, for this to all happen. The reasons why we have ramps or there's regulations for buildings to have ramps for wheelchairs. There's reasons why there's buttons when you're crossing the street for those who are blind and whatnot to hear the sound. So it's really interesting just digging that history. That something I think a lot of us take for granted because a lot of us are able people. We have mm-hmm. no disability. So recommend watching that. But about the book itself, it is divided into four parts. The four parts are being, becoming, doing, and connecting. It tells the stories about like people with disabilities, but also has this intersectional identity, like especially people with who are marginalized in society by like their race, their sex, or by their class. It tells stories about like individuals that have been basically invisible in the pop culture in our society. There's one particular story I want to highlight that pretty much gave, like, it opened up my eyes and just gave me a more sense about what's happening in their community. It's the story written by Talia A. Lewis, titled for Kai Tae D. Davis, Who Loves Us. I don't really want to spoil what the story is about, but I recommend it. It's actually online somewhere. I think one of the major newspaper publications actually published it online like 4 or 5 years ago. But it's about a individual, Kai Tae D. Davis, who died. But it's about how he's very hopeful and whatnot about the future, not about like only disability rights, but as a humanity. And there's really great quotes from that piece. It's only like probably a 5 to 10 minute read too, but I really recommend it. As for the overall book, it comes from like a place of vulnerability, also like solidarity too, because it's about these people telling their stories and their lives, but also you find solidarity in their story where a lot of them are coming from the same place, even though they're different people. And then, like I said, like once you start reading it, some of us take things for granted, but you actually come out like looking at life differently after reading it. But yeah, I also like some of the stories might even make you more angry because you didn't know this is happening. Some of them are really humorous and some of them are sad. But I think ultimately, like if you ultimately it will make you empathize with the writers of the stories and also engage with their struggle to be visible, basically. So yeah, I highly recommend it. It's out now. If you purchase it, I think you should purchase it directly from their bookstore. Their website, disabilityvisibilityproject.com/book. But yeah.
That's cool that you can buy straight from them.
Yeah, because of this also, I even thought about like for folks who are like either deaf who want to listen to this podcast, where you and I were talking about like transcribing the podcast.
Oh, yes.
And like
we're still like in the beginning early process phase of that,
yeah. But we're also like being more proactive about like, I think I've asked you if your videos have closed captioning, which comes with like YouTube if you're on YouTube. So that's good. It's a really good way to just be more proactive about everything. But yeah. So what have you been doing?
I've been watching the second season of Doom Patrol. That's on HBO Max. So. It used
so
to
you
be
recommend
on...
me this.
Yes, yes. I think you never watched the first season, right?
I only watched the first episode.
Oh, you did watch the first first episode. Okay. So it used to be on DC Universe, and sadly this week they announced DC Universe is basically dissolving into HBO Max. All the TV shows are being switched to HBO Max, and it was like a telltale sign. When if you don't know, Ben, like it used to be called like Doom Patrol, DC Universe Doom Patrol, like that, or
I didn't know
Titans.
That.
Yeah, it used to be DC Universe Titans, but they changed it to just DC, so that means they're getting rid of DC Universe, and I think they're still keeping the comic book part of it, where you can read comic books on the website, but they're now it's all the TV show, every TV show that premiered there from Swamp Thing to, you know, Doom Patrol, Teen Titans.
Did you watch Swamp Thing?
I did. I stopped because I it was a commitment. I liked the story, but I didn't know how far the commitment. But they ended the show, so I wanted to go back to watch it.
Okay. I remember they didn't get a second season, right?
No, they didn't. But I heard they're integrating the characters into other properties. Like, you know how like DC is really into like just making everything together now on the TV front? Like with, what was that thing called? The Arrowverse thing they did? I forgot what it's called. The Final Crisis thing they did in the Arrow. Similar. They had Doom Patrol on there. So that's why.
Really?
I didn't know. Yeah, they made like a small appearance.
Like the same actors too?
Yeah. No, the way they got the scene though, it's from uncut or cut footage from that season. And they just integrated it into the series. Yeah, they weren't filming it because of Infinity. Final Crisis?
Yeah,
Infinity Crisis, Final Crisis. I don't know. So I watched the second season of Doom Patrol. It is one of my favorite shows. Or it's actually my favorite superhero show, you could say. The show is created by Jeremy Carver. He also made Being Human. So do you remember Being Human?
I
remember watching probably one or two episodes of the it's a show. I think it's a remake of a British show.
Yeah, it is.
And
yeah.
It's like a ghost, a vampire, and something else, like living
you're
together.
You're just bringing up all these memories about it now.
Oh yeah. The show stars Diane Guerrera, April Bowlby, Matt Boomer, Brendan Fraser, Timothy Dalton, Jovan Wade, and also introducing to the cast is Abigail Shapiro. She plays a Dorothy, so it's a new character they introduced from last season from the final episode, but she's playing her. I don't believe she had like a face. They introduced the name and probably like behind her head, but they didn't have a face for her. So a lot of these characters are from the comic books. I've never read it. I think it's mostly from, oh God, what's his name? I forgot the writer who writes the first edition of it. He's a famous writer. Let me look this up real quick, just because it shows like how deep this story probably goes.
Like they just didn't take a bunch of like amateur writers. So it's like these are writers who known Doom Patrol for a while.
Yeah, for a while. So it is who wrote it? Oh wow, they don't really. They don't have a good way to determine. Oh, Grant Morrison. That's it.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, they take a lot of the story from Grant Morrison's run of Doom Patrol. And they take a little bit of Gerard's Way. Gerard's Way from My Chemical Romance. He is currently writing the Doom Patrol series for DC right now. So, they take a little bit from him. So, it still tells the same story of Crazy Jane, Elastic Girl, Negative Man, Robot Man, the Chief, and Cyborg. So Cyborg is never a Doom Patrol character, I believe. It's what's his name? Beast Boy. So they kind of did like a switch, only because Titans had Beast Boy, so they put Cyborg in it.
Oh.
Yeah. And in this season they introduced Dorothy, and she's part of the like in that run too. I have to say, this show is still really great. It pushes a lot of boundaries of like superhero movies. They talk about various like topics and themes and stuff like that. They still have a theme about sexuality and how different is everyone. And this one, they dive in a little bit of like government corruption or corruption in general, mostly I guess the government, because there's a character that's introduced that Cyborg knows that is she's part of like a military that kind of like is corrupt, or I don't know what you call it, like militia or like a secret military.
A militia and, is
and his story, yeah. his more main
like
story.
Blackwater,
yeah, you know, similar, yeah. To that. And Cyborg is a hero, so he has to like basically choose like, oh, do I help her, what is it, like that's his main story. The main like A story of this is saving Jane and Dorothy. So Jane is Crazy Jane. She has multiple personalities, but they live in this place in her mind called the Underground, and it's basically collapsing in her head. So all these different personalities are disappearing and whatnot. And it's a mystery of what's happening in her head. And then with Dorothy, she has a very supernatural power that can end the world.
What?
I want to be vague for that, because it's very intriguing, like her character. And then it's cool. Like it's very like offbeat type of comedy. Brendan Fraser still does a great job as Robot Man. He's basically like a foul mouthed dude that, you know, macho and stuff like that, but he lives in a robot body. So it's hard for him to like maneuver and have feelings or touch and stuff like that, because he's kind of mad that he's in the robot body. And they revisit some characters from season one, like Danny the Street. They show up again, so that's kind of cool. And then they do other characters that like one-offs characters. I have to like research some of these people they show, and it's like in the first three episodes they show these characters, and they're like well-known like fan favorite DC villains that are like kind of like corny, like really like C or D-list.
You're telling character. Me a comic book character isn't corny?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you see these characters, Ben, and then see that how they actually look in the comic book and how like one-to-one they are to the comic book, I was like, man, they just made this silly. Like,
I mean, really I remember watching the first episode with Robot Man, and I thought it reminds me of like a Doctor Who type of
kind
production.
Of like a monster of the week type. But it is, the production still I think is good. Like, to give example, there's a first episode, they're miniatures and they're living inside a miniature town for a while, and everything looked like a miniature. Like, they build the set to make it look like a, you know, a big thumbtack. It's not CGI. These are actual things they built in the town wise. So they do go outside and whatnot. Of course, it's CGI. But in the town wise, they build a whole bunch of like, it almost reminds me of Beetlejuice. You remember in Beetlejuice when Beetlejuice is living inside the town?
Yeah.
It looks like that. Like, they did a good job of making it look like that, like the fake grass and stuff. So I was like, man, this is cool. Like, the production wise is really good. And then the story wise, I really like. I was kind of like nervous of going into the last episode thinking like, oh, how is this going to end? Like, is it going to end in the way where it's a cliffhanger because of COVID? Or is it going to end like satisfying? I was satisfied with the ending, but I wish there was more. This season it only had 9 episodes. Last season it had 12. I feel like, even though it's a short series, I feel like maybe COVID had a thing with it. Maybe they had more and they wanted to film the next 3 episodes. But it does end like in the cliffhanger that really wants me to watch more of season 3. And I don't even know when season 3 is going to come back, because the pandemic's happening, and I think they stopped production of the show. I like it a lot. There's another show I watch, I'll maybe talk about next week, Umbrella Academy. And they're even though we're like missing all these like, oh, Black Widow, Wonder Woman 84, New Mutants, all these shows or movies that were going to come out this summer, I think right now TV's really handling it well, where it makes, for me, like, I'm getting my my itch scratched with all these shows. And like, I think a couple of weeks is Boys. So The Boys is coming out.
Oh, is that coming out in a couple weeks?
I think so. I mean, I've been seeing a lot of trailers about it, but I don't really
see
the date.
I have not watched one trailer of it.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I know there's like a scene with a whale.
Also, it's a good time to catch up on shows too.
Yeah.
Because we know like all these streaming services have several of those shows in their back pocket, like waiting until like, because I think because of the quarantine and the pandemic that they're going to release it, you know, later on.
Yep.
So it's kind of interesting.
I have to also mention, if you have like unmature or non-mature kids, you know, who you don't want to, you know, show nudity or
it's a little bit explicit.
Yeah, a little explicit. There's like probably 2 or 3 episodes they just show sex.
I mean, that first the first episode, I remember there was like,
more of that. There's literally an episode called Sex Patrol, so yeah. That episode, just stay away if you don't want to watch anything or with your kids around. They do a lot of sex in that one.
Someone mentioned to me that when the comic book Doom Control was starting, that the creators are actually, they accuse Stan Lee of stealing it when he made the X-Men.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities to it.
Okay. But Doom Patrol was created before the X-Men, I think.
I believe, in the comic
book sense. Like,
yeah, the comic book sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost the same idea with a guy in the wheelchair gets these superheroes to be a family inside a mansion. I think that's basically it.
Yeah.
Other than that, Doom Patrol is more like a zany, offbeat misfits versus like a family heroes. Yeah. Not family in the sense like we're together, not like blood related.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Watch Doom Patrol. It's on HBO Max right now.
Two seasons.
Yep, only. Two seasons.
And then next week you're going to talk about Umbrella Academy?
Yes.
Okay.
Jeez.
Okay.
I mean, I can talk about it now, but I'll separate
it. Oh, no, it's okay. So that is what we've been doing this past couple weeks. I guess we're going to talk about main discussion. This week's main discussion is Netflix's Project Power.
What if the pill could give you 5 minutes of pure power?
It can make you strong, invisible, explosive. You never know what your power is until you try it.
All the genetic potential just waiting to be released.
So that's your power.
That is a clip from the trailer, or a clip from the film Project Power, directed by Henry Yoost and Ariel Schulman. Those names sound familiar, is because they actually directed Catfish. If you remember, Ariel's brother is Nev Schulman, so who was the man that was being Catfish in the movie.
Man, they do the TV show then.
Yeah,
right?
They do the TV show. They direct some of it. I don't think they are as they're not as on it as much as any before.
Isn't there like a weird controversy with them, or no? That's someone's Catfish. I forgot.
It was in Catfish.
Okay,
I don't think
someone
they,
in Catfish,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's no one. Yeah, I think they're okay. but they also directed Paranormal Activity 3 and 4. I think their latest actual narrative films were two films that came out the past 4 years, Viro and Nerve, which I've never watched. I do remember one of the trailers has to deal with, like, I think it was, what's James Franco's brother? One of the Frankos.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Yeah, but I remember he was inside the trailer. But I've never watched those two. I've heard that Machine Gun Kelly's in both of those films. So
I didn't even know Machine Gun Kelly was in this film. Like, Project Power.
Because he's barely in it, but he's also not recognizable.
Yeah, you can't recognize him at all.
Yeah. They directed those. Written by Mattson Tomlin. If that name does not ring a bell yet, but he is, he doesn't have a lot of film screenwriter credit, but he's also co-writing the Batman, the Matt Reeves Batman.
Go back to the directors. They are directing a Mega Man film.
Are they?
Yes, on their IMDb, remember, it's a Mega Man film.
I remember hearing about it, but I didn't know they were the ones directing it. Actually, I could see them doing that after watching this film.
Yeah, same here.
Like,
I don't know how they're going to do it, like, to make it look nice, like the...
I really wish take the route of, like, Speed Racer. Like the
that style.
Wachowski's Speed Racer.
Yeah.
Like, bright colors, very anime.
They should do it that way, yeah.
Yeah. So the writer's Mattson Tomlin, which is going to direct he's a co-writer of the Batman. So if this is an indication of, like, how the Batman will be, I don't know. how is it going to be? But anyway, it's starring Jamie Foxx, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, speaking of Batman, Dominique Fishback,
you mean Robin.
Rodrigo Saroto, huh?
You mean Robin.
Yeah, Robin, yeah. So IMDb, when a pill that gives its users unpredictable superpowers for 5 minutes hits the streets of New Orleans, a teenager dealer and a local cop must team with an ex-soldier to take down the group responsible for its creation. I'll go first really quick. Overall, I thought it was really fun and entertaining. I think the opening scene with Jamie Foxx's character Art facing Machine Gun Kelly's character Newt was the highlight of the film for me. And after that, it kind of sizzles down when it comes to the action, like when people are using their powers. They only show people using their powers in a, like, you know, 2 or 3 minute increments only now afterwards. I do really like the idea and the conception of, like, the pill, how it only gives you the ability for 5 minutes. And it's going to give you the same ability all the time because due to evolution that people have a certain reaction to the pill. There's probably, like, a weird metaphor about it, about, like, substance abuse that I don't know if the film is ready to talk about it.
No, I don't think so, there's
a lot of commentary about, like, in subtext of the film itself about how the government or the system isn't working with the people of New Orleans, about substance abuse, about
how people in suits destroyed our city.
Like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, so. very alluding to the Katrina, what happened to Katrina. But I feel like they just brush it all off, though.
It's
very secondary to the actual plot. It's not like, which I'm not mad about. I feel like it's okay to have this, I don't want to say mindless action, but it's very much like a superhero film with just characters that are not, you know, IP anymore. There's no intellectual property towards these people. There's these new characters. It's not based on a comic book. It's not based on a book or, you know, anything else. So it's kind of cool to see that. But yeah, I really like everything about it. I really like the direction, actually. I think I messaged you that it reminded me of, like, a music video, especially that first half of the film. It reminded me of, like, a music video. You could see, I don't know if you noticed this, John, but when you're watching it, there was some, I guess, inspiration from, like, Sam Raimi, like, about the quick cuts.
And, oh,
like,
yeah.
When
the camera
going,
use,
like,
the way, yeah, like, the everything use, has a camera inside it.
Yeah, or, like, there's a always a lot of close-ups, like those.
The face expressions.
That's kind of cool and everything about it. But, yeah, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and this is not, like, the best actor. I don't know what he's trying to do.
I don't know what voice was he doing.
He's, like, a very, he's trying to be, like a cop from, like, the 90s. I don't know. Like, he's like, this is my city and whatnot.
But he kind of is trying to copy Clint Eastwood.
I mean, that was actually kind of funny to
watch. He says that, too. Like, I want to be, like, Clint Eastwood and whatnot.
Yeah. But yeah, like, that's opening scene with Machine Gun Kelly's character. I thought that was going to be throughout the movie. It is actually kind of cool to see some of the abilities happening and how, like, I actually was kind of amazed. Like, I think they're doing a better job with most superhero films when they're, like, the visual effects. It looked too polished.
So
too perfect.
You can go to Netflix YouTube account. They have a making of that scene.
Oh, cool.
It is a lot of practical effects. I'm like, wow, this is not
really
what I thought.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A lot of lights.
It does
on,
look
on
like
Machine
a lot of
Gun Kelly guy. Yeah. On him. Like red lights to get that effect of fire. I mean, and then even when he's, like, jumping and stuff, that's him. And he's super skinny. I did not know that.
Yeah,
His body type is, like, kind of like that guy who always plays the skinny characters in sci-fi movies, like Abe from Hellboy or
Star Trek.
Like, his body type, and he's tall. He's a very tall person. But all that stuff was all makeup, and the only thing that's fake is the fire. I was like, man.
The flames is probably after post, the way they do
the flames is they film someone mimicking his movements throughout the show and in the film. I was like, what? That's cool. Like, and then they just put the flames on him in digitally, but it's real flames. It's not like fake flames they made up.
That's probably why it looks so real.
Like, the combination of all these techniques of, like, practical effects, they just layered over each other, and it looks nice. As I was like, man, I was like you. I was like, man, this is a really cool scene. Like,
I know the directors are a fan of practical effects. They're very old school in that sense, because I think, because of Paranormal Activity 3 and 4, they really love, like, grounded, old school practical effects. So
that's go check that out on YouTube. It's on their Netflix.
I need to check that out. I didn't know that was actually a thing. Other than that scene, though, like, when, I don't want to spoil, like, when other people take pills.
Yeah,
it was very like a mediocre.
There's one specifically is like, this is bad.
yeah. What's your thoughts about the film?
I like the film too. I remember watching the trailer, and I didn't realize what type of story it is. It is a story that in the end of the day, it's a common kind of like a trope, like what do you call it? Like the hero raise or help someone to become a hero too, like that type of trope. I don't know what you call that type of trope. But I was surprised about where it goes, direction it went, especially with Jamie Foxx's character and Dominique Fishback. I like their relationship with each other, their chemistry and stuff like that. I liked it more when them two are together versus with Frank and Robin. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays Frank, and then Dominique plays Robin. I like Jamie Foxx when he's with Robin. Yeah, and then
their chemistry is really pretty good. It does remind you of a Batman and Robin.
It is, yeah. There is tropes though in there I don't like. Yep, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the tropes in there is a detective work that I don't like with Robin, where you tell the character stay here, and then the character doesn't stay there. it literally happens multiple times in the movie
with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character.
Yeah, Rob is mostly Robin's the one that's doing it, but. I'm happy that she does have like a big role in helping them, and then she does, you know, do her heroic stuff. And I won't say other stuff about her, but there's a thing that they didn't do that I was happy they didn't do, like the thing that I typical hero movies will do with that character, and then they will do something, they pick something for her to choose, and then she doesn't even make the choice in here. It doesn't even happen. So I'm happy about that. Also, there is a scene here, besides the fact of the Machine Gun Kelly scene, there's a scene here that I really liked the way they shot it. It's basically, it's in the scene where they're in this club, Jamie Foxx's character trying to find a character, and they have this person go inside a tank to show off her power, and her power is shown off to, so she's in the tank. I mean, that's how they can contain the power if it's too strong. But they did they do a scene there where the camera goes around the two.
It's like a continuous really shot.
Cool. Yeah, it's a continuous one shot. Take,
yeah.
But it's really cool. I thought it was cool to the point. The scene starts out with music, then the music dies off slowly. And I thought that was the way they shot that was just.
And really it becomes sort of like a horror film in that.
Especially if you've seen the background versus the foreground. The scene. It's really cool.
It's kind of cool, actually, because I've never seen where that it's from that perspective. We know how that fight is going to end and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's actually interesting to see it from the person that's not involved in the fight.
Yep, just seeing their point of view. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's a typical like hero story arc with the government and how it ends and whatnot. It kind of ends with a way they can make a part two, only because you don't see certain characters die, really.
Yes, like, yeah.
So there might be a part two. Yeah, the villains. So they could do a part two
in a new city and whatnot.
Yeah. If they go that route, I want it where it's a different character. Like do an anthology.
Or like a television series.
Yes. With Robin. With different characters. But probably Robin's the only one. But other than that, I want to see other powers. Like these are cool, but what if you get two powers? Or what have, like the evolution? And then watching this film, I was like, Disney could make an X-Men film like this. Like, start off with like this. Like, don't begin with, Professor X, we need the X-Men. Start off offbeat, right? You're just following, Jean Grey, or what's her name? The one with the sparkles, right? She's Jubilee. So, just see her story going to the X-Men, like that point of view. Like, don't start off ready with the whole cast. Like, do it that way, like how we did with Robin. Like, you know, someone that you don't know, and then show the... her evolution of like the story and whatnot.
I also really appreciate what the Robin character represents, that you don't need superhero powers to have a voice, basically. Oh, well, she has a voice, and it's a unique voice because her talent, I'm not going to spoil it, but her talent's very different. It's very something that you could, anyone could probably, not everyone could do, but anyone who doesn't have a superpower could do.
Yeah.
And it's a, it's very much, there's like, that's what I said, there's a lot of subtext, that they don't really talk about in the film, but it's there about like the I guess the word power and how you have the power to change like the system, and that you don't need superhero powers to do it. Like you could do other things to change the system, which is really, I appreciate that. Like the at least anyone who watches this be like, oh, okay, I could do it in a different way. I don't have to have this fantasy of like having a superhero power. But yeah,
maybe that's what Disney should do with the X-Men.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an X-Men that has no real power. I'm trying to think, but yeah.
Also, some say that, dang, who's that X-Men that they make fun of? I forgot which one is it now.
I know they introduced like a couple, several years ago, of they introduced like this character that didn't have a power at all in X-Men. And then people were mad, like, oh, you have to have powers. But he wanted to be like a hero. And so he joined.
Oh, I didn't know. I mean, didn't they do that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at first? With the
kind of, yeah,
one
yeah,
of the protagonists, until later on they found out that they do have a power. Yeah.
she's Quake. It's Daisy's character. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that I think overall we are very positive. I don't think it's like one of those. See, I've never watched yet The Old Guard or what's the other Extraction.
Like, wait, you never watched Old Guard?
Not yet. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one too. I like that one. I didn't even know that was a comic book until the ending of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think I always stayed away from the Netflix action movies sometimes because I just feel like there's just regurgitations of other like superhero movies and whatnot. So, or action films in overall, like Extraction could be any.
I don't even know what action Extraction is.
It's with Chris Hemsworth, where he extracts, like he saves someone, and he saves someone, and then he protects them.
Trailers of this,
yeah, like he's supposed to take down a mark, but instead he actually saves the mark.
Okay,
and then they're chasing him now.
Professional and all that.
Yeah, yeah, the professional. Yeah, so you know exactly what I. I think that even the mark is actually a young person too.
Oh, okay,
in Extraction. So, but yeah, so. I think that's our thoughts about Project Power. Yeah, we recommend it. It's on Netflix right now. Do you have anything else to say about the film? That's it?
No, that's it.
Yeah. So next week, we're actually excited that we're going to talk about Lovecraft. Lovecraft? Is it Lovecraft?
Why it is Lovecraft County.
No, Country.
Country. Country, yeah.
Yeah, Lovecraft Country, which is a another series on HBO. So... looking forward to that. We're going to have a couple of guests. I won't say who the guest is. Hopefully, when they're listening to this, they're still going to be on. But yeah. So looking forward to that. I always love it when we have guests. John, before we leave, where can they find you on the interweb?
You can find me on the most organized Twitter feed of XX20XX at Abai Arts. And you can check out the date night videos that Audrey and I make together.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You could find all of us, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at FTA Now. I don't think we have any posts
TFA
on Instagram.
Now.
Oh, TFA Now.
I think you said TNA Now.
Yeah, TFA Now. I don't think we have anything on Instagram yet, but I think we're going to change that probably.
Yeah.
If you want to like us or engage with us on Facebook at The Freaking Awesome or join us on Discord servers, I think there's a link to the show's notes for that one. Please subscribe, rate, and leave comments on iTunes or Google Play. If you want to email us your concerns, comments, or corrections, email us at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. Remember, there's no G on freaking. I know some people probably gonna, I don't know where that goes to actually. But yeah, I think that's it. Thank you for listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.